I greatly appreciate the report, and I frankly hesitate to say much following at all. But I will ask you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, because maybe this was the Lord's plan all along. There is a phrase here from the passage that I have had on my mind this week to share with you that is highly appropriate after hearing Brother Ray's report and requests. Well, let's start in verse 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 8. For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure, above strength, insomuch that we despaired even of life. That was breaking into context, so let me tell you what's going on. This is the second epistle by Paul to the Corinthians, and he was planning to return to them, but he was apparently providentially hindered by some significant hinderings. And so we just heard him say that whatever this hindering was, whatever this affliction was, which he doesn't give us the details here, it brought them to a place where it was, they had a real sense that it was beyond their strength, beyond their own strength to handle the situation. That it was totally beyond themselves. So much, he says, that we despaired even of life. But we had the sentence of death in ourselves. They were certain that they were going to die. That's so. Don't you kind of want to wish you knew what it was? But the Lord decided we didn't need to know what it was. What we needed to know was how He handled the situation. They were so much in despair. They were so pressed out of measure, above strength, that they had written their own death sentence. They said, we're going to die. This is the end, my brethren. This is the end. But we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God, which raiseth the dead, who delivered us from so great a death, and doth deliver, in whom we trust that He will yet deliver us. Ye also helping together by prayer for us, that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, that is, the deliverance from death, thanks may be given by many on our behalf. What a testimony Paul gives us of the deliverance of their God, by their God, out of this certain death in their mind. Certain death. So what do we have here? He confesses that God had brought them to this place providentially, and that He had brought them to a place where they were certain, as far as they could tell, from their own vision, they were going to die. And you can only imagine what kind of thoughts must have been running through their minds. Unless you've been there, then you might know. Maybe you have been at such a place in your own experience where you were certain that death was the next step. But God brought them to this place, and He brought them to teach them a very important lesson: to not trust in themselves, but to trust in God. So that they would say something like, God, if we are to live another day, it will be Your work and Your work alone. Because I know that right now, if You don't intervene, if You don't do something beyond the ordinary, I'm looking at death in the face. And so they learned their lesson. They learned their lesson. That is very key to when the Lord brings us through trials. Now, we've been talking about trials a lot lately. We've been talking about afflictions. In James, we've been talking about afflictions, particularly afflictions of sickness. All sorts of trials. And it is so key that we approach and we work through those trials in a conscious effort, as Paul does here, to acknowledge and to really seek out understanding what God is teaching us in the trial. Because if we believe that He is in the trial, which and He says that He is, then there's a purpose. He's not doing it to cause us anxiety, to play around with us like fooling a dog around with some kind of treat and never giving it to him, or just causing him to have a hard time and never giving him relief. That's not our kind and benevolent Father. He intends to teach us. And so we go through these trials like Paul. We have a conscious mindset before God to ask Him to teach us and to, in this case, show us that it is He who we must trust in. Now, what specific element about God does He bring up here when He is saying, God, you will have to do the work? What does He say? That we should not trust in ourselves, but in God which raiseth the dead. In God which raiseth the dead. It would have been accurate to say in God which could prevent us from death. But, you know, in our experience, we, in sickness, for example, there are often, not always, but there are often means that God has given us providentially through medicine, through doctors, through living a healthy life, you know, making healthy decisions in our life, that we can, from a natural standpoint, we can avoid death, right? We can prolong our life. I speak as a man. But there's no doctor in Scranton, Paris, Fort Smith, Arkansas, the United States, Russia, or the whole world that after you die can give you life again. And so to me it is significant that in this moment when the issue at hand, Paul's concern at hand is the possibility of death, that Paul beseeches God on the basis not just that He could prevent him from this calamity, naturally speaking, but that God is the one who has the power to resolve even if this death occurs. And so God is in an exclusive territory now. He's the only one in this territory. He's the only one. Because what did we say last week, I believe, or 2 weeks ago? Who cares if you get well from your sickness? Who cares if you avoid death for a few years? If at the end of the day, you're going to wake up not in fellowship with God, but in hell. That's exclusive territory for God. That's the point. So, Paul, in this time of trial, for this particular issue, which is a matter of looking at death in the face, he recognizes God at His most exalted, in His most supreme and sovereign position, who is the one who has the power of life itself. His trust is in God which raiseth the dead. Let me offer you an analogy to maybe bring the point across. What if you have two kings, and you have a serious need? You have a complaint, a serious request that you need help with. And you know the track records of these two kings. And one king, he's really a weak king. He does a lot of commands. He makes a lot of commands. He's got an army and all that, but they don't really listen. They don't obey. He doesn't have this authority that always, where he always accomplishes what he wants to accomplish. He's a weak king. The people don't respect him. He can't get things done. There's this other king, on the other hand, that has great authority with the people. And there's also much respect there. But he has a track record. He's known as being the king that when he sets out to do something, whether it's to fight a battle, whether it's to build a city, whatever it is, when he sets out to do something, it happens. He accomplishes his goal. The people respond. They obey. His resources come into action. And his goals are always accomplished. He has a perfect track record of accomplishing his will. That's a very fearful kind of king too, right? Because what if his will is opposed to you? He's still going to accomplish his will. But if you are in a position of great need, and you're in this place where Paul was, you're looking, let's say, at death's door. You're at the end of your rope. Which king, not knowing how they're going to respond necessarily to your particular request, which king are you going to go to in your time of need? Which one? We're not talking about when you feel self-confident and you have a plan B in case this one doesn't work out. We're talking about when you're at the end of your rope. Which king will you go to? I dare say you will go to the one whom you know he will accomplish what he wants to do. And you will hope that your need, your desire, falls in line with his will. That's your hope. And if it does, then it's going to happen. That's your hope. We have the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God, which raiseth the dead. My friends, as we experience those times of life that bring us to that place, there are so many teachings, Jesus is teaching, namely, of course, that we are to first go to God. But when we go to God, what is this incredible promise? We won't unfold it all this morning. But what does Jesus Christ say? He gives some startling promises. He gives some startling promises, such as, breaking it into context of the passage, ask, ye shall receive. Knock, it will be opened. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. And all these things that are mentioned in the context, your actual needs in life, they will be added unto you. So what should be your motive? What should be your goal? Because we're needy people. That's us by definition. We're needy. Is that as we come before God with our needs, it's okay. Come to Him with your need. Come to Him with the needs of others. But you do this with a spirit that recognizes it is the King who will do His will. And so far, and this is This is the crux of the matter. So far from knowing that God is going to do what He wants to do, He will always complete His will. He will execute His will. So far from that discouraging you from going to Him, which it could, it has me, I thought, well, if God is going to do what He wants to do anyway, why even go to Him? Why even ask Him? He's just going to do what He wants to do. Maybe you've asked the same question before. But do you see, hopefully, the analogy of the kings? When you're in a position of pride, you might ask a question like that. But when you're in the reality position, where you are a needy soul and you need God, then you don't have to be so concerned about that. Why go to Him anyway? Because He'll do what He wants to. You will run to Him because you know He will do what He wants to do. And you will pray that your will be aligned with His. And you will seek, you will work to make your will aligned with His. Now there's a lot more to this analogy. To fill out the reality of the story is His goodness and His wisdom. And the fact that there's a love relationship here. This isn't merely a king and subject. It's a father-son. There's a love relationship. And that makes it so much more beautiful. So run. Go to Him with your needs. Don't let the fact that He is sovereign scare you. Let it be the reason that you go to Him. Because you might, the king that's weak, he may be the nicest king. He may just always say, I want to do whatever your desires are. But if you can't ever get it done, it doesn't matter, does it? Go to the king who can get it done. Now, the next verse, or the verse 11, he says, ye also helping together by prayer for us, that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, thanks may be given by many on our behalf. Now, this is a marvelous verse. Paul says, you were together. You were coming together and you were helping. The root of this word is it basically means to working under with. You were serving Paul by praying for him. And you were doing this together. So you came together helping us, Paul says, in prayer. Now that should mean something to you. That should mean something. Do you think if the reality was that prayer was just a thought, but it didn't go beyond the thought, if it didn't have any consequence, do you think Paul would be using language like this? He's writing to the Corinthians, encouraging them of his love for them and encouraging them in walking steadfastly. And he says, you, Corinthians, helped us by your prayer. You made a difference. Now, why was the difference made? Because they were praying to the king that gets things done, that accomplishes his will at all times. He also helping together by prayer for us, that for the gift bestowed upon us by the means of many persons, so he's saying many people were participating in this, and God granted us a gift of saving us from this death that we were looking in the face through your prayer. He used them. I can't explain it, but he does it. It's real. Your prayers helped, saints. And for that, we take time to offer thanksgiving for the help that you've given us through your prayers by the work of the sovereign God. Thanks may be given by many on our behalf. So actually he says, of course, he's glad for this, but he says, now you, the ones who are praying, the ones who are helping, now you need to know that your prayers were effectual. You need to know what James says, that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. You need to hear the news that your prayers made a difference so you can rejoice and can thank God for His sovereign working through your prayers. So that is what you can do. And on the tails of Brother Ray's testimony of his trip, I exhort us as a body to together help these brothers and sisters in Russia through our prayers.